Maud, a Piggott, Part 2, continued from the January-February issue. Maud, a Piggott, was born in England, traveled to India several times, but ultimately settled down in Hollywood, California, where she passed away on 19th of August 1974 at 87. She was the first Western woman to visit the Maharishi and, by the grace of the Master, had a profound experience in his presence. When first introduced in talks with Sri Ramana Maharishi on 6th of January 1935, her name was given as Mrs. M. A. Piggott, which indicates that she was married. But from her prayer and subsequent travels and other facts we have discovered, we can infer that her relationship with her husband, for whatever reason, at that time must have been tenuous at best. She was then about 48 years old, living in Madras. Soon afterwards, she moved to New Zealand. In 1937, she sailed for Los Angeles, California, where she lived till her death 37 years later. The 1940 U.S. federal census indicates that her marital status was divorced. The number of weeks worked in 1939 were zero. Her residence was rented and her source of income was other. In 1943, she became a naturalized citizen of the United States. All of this points to a woman past middle age, freed from a perhaps unhappy marriage, who was in search of a meaningful purpose in life. From the contents of her 1968 letters to Arthur Osborne and the inspired article she wrote for The Mountain Path, it certainly looks as if Maud Piggott did find the direction and safe harbor she sought many years earlier at the feet of Sri Ramana Maharishi. Her story is the story of numerous Western spiritually hungry souls of her time and our time and perhaps all time. Maud Piggott's residence in California was only a short walk away from the Vedanta Center of Southern California in Hollywood. She gave her article on Bhagavan to the Center for publication in the journal after it was published in The Mountain Path in 1970. Swami Prabhavananda, a respected and dynamic monk of the Ramakrishna order, was the founder and president of the Vedanta Center when Maud Piggott arrived in California in 1937, and he remained so till he passed away in 1976, 2 years after Maud Piggott's demise. In 1938, a beautiful temple at the center was erected. Under the guidance of Swami Prabhavananda, the message of Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda attracted many notable intellectual and literary personalities in the 1930s and 40s, while the center experienced steady growth in both facilities and membership. There is little doubt that Maud Piggott was one of those attracted then, and perhaps even chose her residence in Hollywood to be near the center. Therefore, we can be confident that the spiritual spark that lit up her awareness in the holy presence of the sage of Arunachala early in 1935 continued to be nourished in the rolling hills of Hollywood, California. In her 1968 Mountain Path article, Maud Piggott writes about what she saw and experienced on her first day at Sri Ramanashramam in January of 1935. Apparently, the rules prohibiting women in the ashram after dark had not yet been imposed. After she was shown around the ashram, she returned to the old hall in the evening before leaving for the night. The atmosphere that pervaded the hall must have permanently embedded itself in her memory, for 3 decades later, she writes, "It was dark when we returned for the evening meditation, and most of the people not living permanently in the ashram had left. The hall was compellingly still. The eyes of the Holy One blazed no more. They were serene and introverted. All my troubles seemed smoothed out and difficulties melted away. Nothing that we of the world called important mattered. Time was forgotten. Life in its many aspects was one." On 6th of January 1935, the day of her arrival, Swami Ramananda made the following entry in Talks with Sri Ramana Maharishi. Mrs. M. A. Piggott, an English lady who had read A Search in Sacred India, came to see the Maharishi. The services of a disciple as interpreter were provided. There were many visitors at the time in the hall, including some ladies with their infants. The place resounded with noise. At length, silence prevailed. Suddenly, Maharishi, who seemed to be looking at infinite space, was heard to say softly, "Monkey." A little baby was then discovered in the doorway and observed by the mother, who was seated on the other side of the door, with a large monkey standing on his hind legs, who with both hands was fondling the child, not hurting it in the slightest, both being at peace with each other in Maharishi's presence. When Maharishi's voice was heard, the monkey jumped away adroitly and disappeared. The incident greatly impressed the lady. All the questions she asked and answers the Maharishi graciously supplied have a universal quality that we all can relate to and benefit from. For instance, what are the obstacles which hinder realization of the self? The answers to this and other questions were recorded in talks, but in her 1968 article, she consolidates her version of the conversations, bundling them together and giving their essence. Her memory of these conversations appears to be clear even after 35 years, which makes one inclined to believe that her memory must have been aided by notes she herself kept. After Maud A. Piggott was told by Bhagavan that realization was more the result of the Master's grace than anything else, she went on to ask about practical details for attaining realization. "Is a master necessary for realization?" Mrs. Piggott asked first. "Maharishi, the realization is the result of the Master's grace more than teachings, lectures, meditation, etc. They are only secondary aids, whereas the former is the primary and the essential cause." Mrs. Piggott, "What are the obstacles which hinder realization of the self?" Maharishi, "They are habits of mind, vasanas." Mrs. Piggott, "How to overcome the mental habits, vasanas?" Maharishi, "By realizing the self." Mrs. Piggott, "That is a vicious circle." Maharishi, "It is the ego which raises such difficulties, creating obstacles, and then suffers from the perplexity of apparent paradoxes. Find out who makes the inquiries and the self will be found." Mrs. Piggott, "What are the aids for realization?" Maharishi, "The teachings of the scriptures and of realized souls." Mrs. Piggott, can such teachings be discussions, lectures, and meditations? Maharishi, yes, all these are only secondary aids, whereas the essential is the Master's grace. Mrs. Piggott, how long will it take for one to get that? Maharishi, what do you desire to know? Mrs. Piggott, to give me hope. Maharishi, even such a desire is an obstacle. The self is ever there. There is nothing without it. Be the self, and the desires and doubts will disappear. Such self is a witness in sleep, dream, and waking states of existence. These states belong to the ego. The self transcends even the ego. Did you not exist in sleep? Did you know then that you were asleep or unaware of the world? It is only in the waking state that you describe the experience of sleep as being an awareness. Therefore, the consciousness when asleep is the same as that when awake. If you know what is waking consciousness is, you will know the consciousness that witnesses all the three states. Such consciousness could be found by seeking the consciousness as it was in sleep. Mrs. Piggott, in that case, I fall asleep. Maharishi, no harm. Mrs. Piggott, it is a blank. Maharishi, for whom is the blank? Find out. You cannot deny yourself at any time. The self is ever there and continues in all states. Mrs. Piggott, should I remain as if in sleep and be watchful at the same time? Maharishi, yes, watchfulness is the waking state. Therefore, the state will not be one of sleep, but sleepless sleep. If you go the way of your thoughts, you will be carried away by them, and you will find yourself in an endless maze. Mrs. Piggott, so then I must go back tracing the source of thoughts. Maharishi, quite so. In that way, the thoughts will disappear and the self alone will remain. In fact, there is no inside or outside for the self. They are also projections of the ego. The self is pure and absolute. Mrs. Piggott, it is understood intellectually only. Is not intellect a help for realization? Maharishi, yes, up to a certain stage. Even so, realize that the self transcends the intellect. The latter must itself vanish to reach the self. Mrs. Piggott, does my realization help others? Maharishi, yes, certainly. It is the best help possible, but there are no others to be helped, for a realized being sees the self just like a goldsmith estimating the gold in various jewels. When you identify yourself with the body, then only the forms and shapes are there. But when you transcend your body, the others disappear along with your body consciousness. Mrs. Piggott, is it so with plants, trees, etc.? Maharishi, do they exist at all apart from the self? Find it out. You think that you see them. The thought is projected out from yourself. Find out where from it rises. Thoughts will cease to rise and the self alone will remain. Mrs. Piggott, I understand theoretically, but they are still there. Maharishi, yes, it is like a cinema show. There is a light on the screen and the shadows flitting across impress the audience as the enactment of some piece. It will be similar also if in the same play an audience also is shown. The seer, the scene, will then only be the screen. Apply it to yourself. You are the screen. The self has created the ego. The ego has its accretions of thoughts, which are displayed as the world. The trees, plants, etc., of which you are asking. In reality, all these are nothing but the self. If you see the self, the same will be found to be all, everywhere and always. Nothing but the self exists. Mrs. Piggott, yes, I still understand only theoretically, yet the answers are simple and beautiful and convincing. Maharishi, even the thought I do not realize is a hindrance. In fact, the self alone is. Talk number 13. These were the first recorded dialogues she had with Maharishi on her first visit in 1935. In her 1968 article, she writes about this particular series of questions and answers. It differs from the above in some ways, but nevertheless rings true. I had been in despair of ever getting the Maharishi alone. It is hard to unburden the soul before a crowd. But early one morning, I came into the hall and found him there and attended, emanating a wonderful stillness and peace. I asked quietly if I might talk with him. He nodded, smiling, and sent for someone to translate. On the arrival of a devotee, I put my first question. What are the hindrances to the realization of the true self? Memory chiefly, habits of thought, accumulated tendencies. How does one get rid of these hindrances? Seek for the self through meditation in this manner. Trace every thought back to its origin, which is only the mind. Never allow thought to run on. If you do, it will be unending. Take it back to its starting place, the mind, again and again, and it and the mind will both die of inaction. The mind only exists by reason of thought. Stop that and there is no mind. As each doubt and depression arises, ask yourself, who is it that doubts? What is it that is depressed? Go back constantly to the question, who is the I? Where is it? Tear everything away until there is nothing but the source of all left. And then live always in the end and only in it. There is no past or future save the mind. How can I help another with his or her problems and troubles? What is the stock of another? That is only the one. Try and realize there is no I, no he, no you. Only the one self, which is all. If you believe in the problem of another, you are believing in something outside the self. You will help him better by realizing the oneness of everything than by any outward activity. The ego pertains to all the waking activities, the emotions and intellect. In deep sleep, the body is still, and yet the self is there. It is the distracting, active mind that wields the real self. What meditation will help me? No meditation on any kind of object is helpful. You must learn to realize the subject and object as one. In meditating on an object, whether concrete or abstract, you are destroying the sense of oneness and creating duality. Meditate on what you are in reality. Try to realize that the body is not you, the emotions are not you, and the intellect is not you. When all these are still, you will find what? You will discover it yourself. It is not for me to say what any individual experience will be. It will reveal itself. Hold to that. But in trying to still the mind, I am likely to fall asleep. It does not matter. Put yourself into the condition as in deep sleep, then watch. Be asleep consciously instead of unconsciously. There will be then only one consciousness. More questions were asked on her second extended visit later in January 1935. It is clear from all that we have learned of Maud A. Piggott thus far that she arrived at Ramanashramam at a period of her life in which Bhagavan and his teachings were most needed, and that she was now prepared to take them to heart. Is that not the usual way divine grace works? To be continued.